Okay, Max, so take me back to your first day. How large was it? How many people worked there? Can you kind of paint a verbal picture for me?
The first morning that I walked into the warehouse shipping facility, it was very, very early. It was dark outside. It was November, I believe, and we had to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning, even though we didn't actually start getting paid until 6, because there were so many new people. All the time, there's so many new people that it takes them a long time to sort them out on their first day and get them into training. So we sort of stood around like cattle and were arranged into different groups and lines for about an hour while everyone was checking the roll call and their paperwork. And then at 6, we finally were able to punch in. But the warehouse was, I can't say exactly, but say 600,000 or 700,000 or 800,000 square feet. So wow. Absolutely enormous. Several floors in some places. There were, you know, second and third levels that you could walk up to. And it's just rows and rows and rows and rows of stuff. And they start at the floor. So there are items actually on the floor level. And then they go a little bit higher up above your head so that you'd have to stand on your tiptoes and reach your arms all the way up to be able to get to them. So it's kind of like a library, but packed full of stuff instead of books, except for in the book section, which is packed full of books. And it was absolutely silent, just no noise, even though there were thousands upon thousands of people working. Everybody has to work very, very, very fast in order to meet their goals. So they're very quickly and very quietly speed walking all over the place, just passing each other like silent little worker bees.
Wow. And you mentioned stuff and books being one, some of the stuff. What other stuff was there?
There's unlimited amounts of stuff. I mean, there's anything you could think of in the universe exists in this warehouse. So there is a book section, of course, but then there are paper towels, there's toilet paper, there's soap, and then there's Barbie dolls, there's all manner of toys, sex toys, actually, lots of, which I was surprised to see, groceries, furniture, like small furniture items even, although those obviously aren't on the tiny shelves. Those are in a special section of the warehouse. There was a battery-operated flour sifter. There were battery-operated olive oil misters. There were really unfathomable numbers of iPad accoutrement, like things that you could put on or near or plug into your iPad. There, anything you could possibly think of, and many things that you would never think of. I didn't know a battery-operated flour sifter existed, and there were lots of things in there that I had never even seen before. You know, those wearable blankets.
Snuggle. Yeah, those things. Wow.
Everything. Yeah. Everything you could think of and more.
Wow.
Batteries.
Batteries, yeah. Can you tell me about a typical shift? What would you do?
Well, every single shift was the same, and everything that you do on a shift is run, basically. So we would come in, and there was a big break room. There's no lockers, but there were shelves. So you could put your things on shelves, but if you had any valuables, you know, we were warned that things were often stolen. But you couldn't take your phone with you into the warehouse. So if you wanted to, and you weren't allowed to leave the warehouse at any point. So if you wanted to have your phone anywhere accessible in your 10.5-hour shift, you had to leave it in the break room and just take your chances, which was not a big deal for me, but say for the mothers, and there were lots and lots of mothers working in this warehouse, they had to have their phones because every break they would be calling their kids saying, did you do your homework? Have you eaten something? I love you so much. Okay, bye. And we have everybody sort of files in to the warehouse, and then you have to start, you know, immediately. You are not allowed to clock in 1 second late. So it's better to be early. And you just start working. You have goals. You have, I think mine was 1,500 items I was supposed to pick per day.
Wow.
And you have a little scanner, a little computer like in your hand that tells you how you're doing and how many seconds you have to make each order fulfillment. So it'll say, like, it'll give you a code. It's in this section of the warehouse, on this shelf, this row, this level, this color code. You know, there's so many things. It's broken down quite intricately. And you have 15 seconds to get to that spot and get the Barbie doll. So you just hustle. And then as soon as you scan the barcode with your little handheld scanner, it gives you the next thing. And it will say, again, you have 18 seconds to get to this space in the warehouse. And as you're walking very quickly or jogging, it will count down the time, like 17, 16, 15. Wow, so you know that you're running down. It's like a countdown clock. And you do that until the first break comes, which is 15 minutes long. And you run back to the front. And by the time, you know, this warehouse is enormous. So by the time you get to the front and then you go through a metal detector because they didn't want anybody stealing anything. And if you have to go to the bathroom or something, you have to wait in another line. There's like 8 stalls for all of these people. And then you have maybe 5 minutes to stuff some almonds in your face or something. And then everyone still chewing every time. Everybody's still chewing as they're running back onto the floor, because if you clock in, again, even 1 second late, like, we were actually all reminded at a work meeting one of the days that lunch was 29 minutes and 59 seconds and not a second longer.
Oh, wow.
And then so you just run back and forth to food so that, you know, you can sustain yourself, and then around the warehouse doing your job, and then you leave.
Do you have a sense of how far you ran in the course of a day?
Yeah, when you sign up for the job, they give you a bunch of paperwork that you have to say, okay, yes, I understand this. And it will say that it estimates that you're going to walk, if you had my job, which is called picking, that you're going to walk, by which I mean speed walk or, you know, lightly run, 12 miles a day on concrete floors.
Wow. So how would you feel by the end of the day?
When I started that job, you know, there are other jobs where you could just be standing at a conveyor belt and packing or doing the actual taping. Like, there are jobs that they try to give to the older people, because there were a lot of people in their 50s and 60s in the warehouse, and you're just standing still. So when I got one of the jobs, because I was 31 at the time, where I was going to be running around all day, I was actually really excited. Mm. I usually work at a desk, you know, at a computer. And in my previous life, before I had a desk job, I was waitressing, I was cleaning houses. I actually worked in warehouses for a very long time at a moving company. And so I was like, yes, I'm going to be on my feet. I'm going to be moving around. I consider myself very in shape, and I'm Midwestern, so I'm very hardworking, you know.
Yeah.
So I was excited about the job of running around. But I didn't realize that I wasn't physically up to it. Even the first day, by the end of the day, it wasn't just like, oh, you know, I did a little too much activity, I'm kind of sore, like if you work out too much. I had screaming pains in my knees, my hips. You know, I was 31 years old. I'd never felt my knees or my hips in my life. But in my shoulders and my knees and my hips, because again, a lot of the items are on floor level or below waist or chest level. So hundreds of times per day, 300, 500, 700 times per day, just depending on which items you're picking, you have to drop to the floor and stand back up again and drop to the floor and stand back up again. And by the last day, I was in so much pain from doing that so often that if I had items that were on the floor, that were near where I already was, instead of stand up and then, you know, crouch back down, I would crawl to the next shelf over.
You mentioned the goals, the quota, 1,500 items as a picker. Were there other goals? Obviously, you had to pick 1,500 items, and you had to pick them in a set number of time in the countdown clock. Were there other goals that you had to meet, or was that the big one? Not that that's not enough, but...
Yeah, I was basically a robot piece in this assembly line. And my only job was to pick items as quickly and as efficiently as possible. There was no variation in anything that I did at any point in my day. I was either running to the shelves to get the items or running back and forth to the break room to get sustenance so that I could keep running around to get the items. And that's it.
Mm. Yeah. You write about a variety of infractions that could get you fired. Could you tell me about some of them?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to get in trouble. It's on a point system, so they're kind of like demerits. If you clock in 1 second late, that is a point. And it actually was graded, so if you were like a minute late instead of a second late, I think it was more points. Whether from a break or whether starting your shift or whether in between lunch. So you always have to clock in a little bit early. And again, remember, there's thousands of people working in this warehouse and everybody has their break and their lunch break at the same time. So there are long, long lines to the punch-in clock. So you have to factor that in as well. You also were not allowed to wear suggestive clothing. You had to make sure that your pants were high enough that your underwear didn't slip out. If it did, that could be an infraction. Trying to think what else we were... It was mostly about tardiness. Like, the big thing was always being perfectly on time for everything all the time and making sure that you were working every single second of your shift. And then, you know, there were also things like for outfits, weirdly, because, you know, there's no windows in this warehouse. Like, nobody can see you. You're like, it's like being on another planet or like in the catacombs or something. You know, you're totally isolated and you just pass other people occasionally, but you don't really talk to them that much. But for some reason, they had a lot of concerns about what you were wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't talk to them much because you don't have time, do you?
No, you don't have time. You can have conversations where you're sort of like running past each other, you know,
yeah,
sort of like
okay.
a high-speed drive-by conversation.
Right,
where
sort
you're
of
just
like something
hey,
out of
how's
an,
it going?
Yeah, something
hey,
out of an
fine.
Action movie. Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah. Just like running past. I did report on another warehouse previously where there was no talking allowed, and that warehouse was owned by, at the time, the largest third-party logistics contractor. So they're the people who run these warehouses in North America, and their rule was no talking, period. And I actually, in the course, I was in this warehouse for probably 15 minutes or something, and in the course of my being there, I saw someone get fired for talking, and all he said to another person was, "Where are you from?" So we were at least allowed to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that we, you know, had time.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly, yeah. Can you tell me about Brian?
Oh, Brian. on my first day of training, one of the other people in the training, again, we had to get there at 5 o'clock in the morning, so it's, like, still dark outside, and everybody's a little bleary-eyed. But on the first day of training, there's a lot of videos that you have to watch, and there's a lot of lecturing, you know, people just telling you how things work and telling you what the policies are, things like that. And at one point, our trainer, who was leading our sessions, was saying, you cannot be late at all on your first week. Like, if you're late in your second week, then you get points. But if you are late in your first week, again, even by a second, you're fired. Like, you cannot be late to any of the training sessions, and you can't miss a day, no matter what happens. And if you do miss a day, you have to start the process over. So you'll be dismissed. You have to go back to the employment agency that they use for their temporary workers, refill out the application, retake the drug test, wait for your results to clear, and then wait until another training session starts. So it could cost you a couple weeks worth of work and wages. And as an example, our trainer pointed out to us that there was this guy named Brian in the session with us, and he had been through training already, but on one of the days of training, his wife had a baby, and so he had to miss a day, and so he was fired. And so she was giving this to us as an example of, it doesn't matter what your reason is for missing a day in your first week, you cannot do it, you have to start over. So he had missed a couple weeks worth of work and wages and had to start the process over, and then he was redoing the training with us that day. So it was sort of like everyone turns around and looks at Brian, and she's like, don't end up like Brian.
Holding him up as an example, yeah. So birth or death, it doesn't matter. That's
doesn't matter.
Yeah, wow. Your description of the book section sounds especially horrific. Could you tell me what that was like?
I was very excited the day that I was scheduled to work in books because, I'm a nerd, and I just like to be around books. I have a lot of books in my house, and for the previous 3 days, I'd been touching all sorts of weird, random household items. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to be around orderly, beautiful books. So when I was scheduled to that section, I was very happy. But I didn't realize until about 5 seconds in that there's a great amount of static electricity generated in this warehouse. So it's cold outside. We were in a place, a climate that was very, very dry. I had, you know, rubber shoes on concrete, and like, because I'm walking so fast, my pants, I'm wearing pants obviously, are like sort of swishing together. And there are all these conveyor belts that ring the entire, I wonder if that anybody ever measured them. I mean, it seems like it must be miles of conveyor belts running this entire warehouse so that people can put the items that they've picked on them and they can go off to be packed and shipped. So there's a lot of machinery whirring, and between all of those factors, just a huge amount of static electricity is generated. So, and the shelves are metal. So you, and the books are paper. So it's extra dry in the books section. And so I was running up to get my books, and I, you know, a part of my hand makes contact with the shelf when I reach for the book, and it just shocked me. I mean, really hard, shockingly hard. Like, I don't know that I've ever had. It's not just like when you rub your feet on the carpet and then tap your sister to annoy her. It's a really intense shock, and it happens almost every time.
Ouch.
And one of my coworkers, who was 20, he was doing the same thing. We were in the same section, and he ran up to one of his shelves. And when he leaned in to get the book, part of his head, like his forehead, touched the shelf above him and shocked him in his forehead and like knocked him right back. Oh. And he came up to me and he was like, "Be careful of your head." And I was like, "Okay, that's really good advice." And during my lunch break, or maybe it was the first morning break. Yeah, you know, I only have 15 minutes and I have to run the length of this warehouse and try to get to the front and wait in line and go through the metal detector. So my time is very precious on this break if I want to be able to get some food. But I went to one of the supervisors and I was like, do you have any advice? Please tell me you have some advice for what I should do about this static electricity. And she was like, oh, are you working in books today? And I was like, why, yes, I am, because everybody knows that that's a thing. And she was like, I'm sorry. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. It's just part of the deal.
Hmm. Put this in perspective for me. How many companies use temporary workers like this, and why do so many of them contract labor out like this?
Almost everybody, like, who's a major player in the game uses logistics contractors. Amazon, for example, often does their own. They have their own warehouses. They run their own logistics a lot of the time. But they do also, or at least a couple years, they still have their products going through third-party logistics sometimes. So if you opened a store online, you know, like everysweaterintheworld.com or something, and you had all these sweaters that you needed to ship, it's an art and a science, really, to do this as efficiently as possible. You have to warehouse the items. You have to sort them in a way that they're easy to find. You have to have the software that goes with the scanners that helps the employees find them. I mean, this is a business in and of itself. So just because you're an online business doesn't mean that you know how to do that yourself. That's not your business. You make soap or whatever it is. So you call a third-party logistics contractor, and these are huge. This is a, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry, and they are specialists of this. And a lot of the large ones are owned by shipping companies. So Excel, for example, at the time when I was working at this warehouse, was the largest third-party logistics contractor in the United States. They had 86 million square feet worth of warehousing in North America, and they're owned by Deutsche Post, DHL, you know, DHL, mm-hmm. the shipping magnate.
Yeah.
So, but just the third-party logistics arm of their company is, their revenues are $4.2 billion a year.
Wow.
And that doesn't include the actual postage. So UPS, for example, also has a logistics arm. And at the time that I was working there a couple of years ago, that arm of their company was making about $500 million in profits. But then it's also feeding packages, which all need to be shipped, you know, into UPS Inc., which is many billions of dollars worth of revenue in that company. So it's all connected, and it's huge, and it's growing very, very, very fast.
Yeah, and contracting the labor out, of course, is the cheapest way to do it, right? Bottom line.
Well, there are multiple benefits to contracting out labor. One is that you don't have to deal with it. You know, somebody else is dealing with it. And especially if you're using temporary workers, which a lot of these places do, not just during Christmas, although that's, you know, I say Christmas, but that's like 4 months long in the in the shopping industry. Yeah. Not just during Christmas, but year round, you can have a pool of laborers who have to basically call in every day to see if you have work, because if you have this, you know, this software knows how many orders you've gotten. For example, one of the weeks that I was there, they had gotten 2.7 million orders that week. So this computer algorithm is telling them exactly how many human bodies they have, fulfilling their goals to make this 2.7 million order, and they won't have one extra body on the floor. So, I mean, because that would just be wasteful, right? Yeah. So it will tell you how many people you need to the day to get your orders done. And that way you don't have to be paying any extra money as long as everybody's running around very, very quickly. But another reason to contract out through these, you know, employment agencies is that you are not technically their employer. So, for example, Walmart, you know, uses companies like this, and there was a lawsuit against the staffing company for some of their practices, but technically, I mean, those people were working at Walmart, but they weren't working for Walmart. So it kept Walmart out of the liability and put it on this staffing company instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also keeps them out of the headlines often.
Yeah.
Because then Walmart, for example, was not named in that lawsuit. I think they have subsequently been named in others, but they weren't named in it because those people didn't work for them technically.
Right. And for Walmart, there definitely is such a thing as bad publicity. Yeah.
Right. Whereas for Staffmark Incorporated, you've never heard of them and you don't care who they are. And if someone told you that they'd done something scandalous, you would just like shrug.
Right. Yeah, because the name means nothing to me. Yeah. Are consumers complicit in the way that contract workers are treated?
I think that this is caused by consumer demand to an extent, because we have this expectation now that our items are going to be super cheap and they're going to ship for free. And you don't really think, I mean, I never thought, not to say that I was always aware of this, you know, I was buying stuff on Amazon and I was never thinking, how does this company post these revenues, sell everything at a discount, and ship everything for free? Like, how does that even work? So, I mean, you have to squeeze it out of the laborers who are doing it. Like, the profit margins are very thin, so it's all about volume. We actually had signs up in the warehouse that were reminding us that volume was absolutely crucial and speed was absolutely crucial because customers demand it. And so I think there is a complicity on the part of consumers. Yes, you do. At this point, you expect to be able to order something at 9 a.m. from Amazon and it show up at your house at 1:30 sometimes in the same day. But I think that you just don't think about how does that happen. And it doesn't have to happen in an ugly way. Like, you could have more workers on the floor so that they weren't working such punishing quotas, or so that they could be treated in a slightly humanized way, even. You know, more than anything, it's just very, in addition to being painful, it's very dispiriting. Just the whole culture of it is kind of mean and ugly. So you could have more bodies and you could still be hitting these super fast speeds, but everyone also expects everything to be free. You know, shipping has to be free. There's a lot of studies that show that people abandon their orders online if they start, you know, putting items in their cart and then they realize they're going to have to pay for shipping. There's high rates of abandonment for that. So that's what we've come to expect because it's something that companies have offered us, but we just don't realize what that costs. I mean, it costs somewhere else, right? It doesn't cost us, but it is costing, of course, it's costing somebody.